Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 420. A few pieces of news this week. I did want to go ahead and mention that some of you know I was appointed the webmaster for the Illinois Lodge of Research, which is a research body that assists in putting together a publication once a year. We ran into some trouble over the last few years where we just weren't getting things up and running. And so about 2 years ago, we had a worshipful master for the Lodge of Research that really brought us into the 21st century. It didn't have got us a great new website and all this. And everything was fine for a while, and we ran into some headwinds, and it just didn't go well. So we've since picked ourselves up, and we're moving forward. And since I'm the new webmaster, I had to build a new website and everything. And I did want to let everybody know, if you want to check that out, it's IllinoisLodgeOfResearch.org or .com. It doesn't matter. But if you go there, we've got some great information on the Illinois Lodge of Research. If you're a member of the Illinois Lodge of Research, I'd be more than happy to get you member access. You just have to request it. But anyway, I've read several articles that come from the publication of the Illinois Lodge of Research when they're not relating to the secrets of Masonry. Because of that, they're a contributor to the program, really. And they also link back to this podcast on the website. They did before. It's not something that I just put in there because I'm the webmaster. It was already there. But anyway, secondly, MasonicCon Chicago, we got a new speaker announcement coming this upcoming Tuesday. So that'll be really fun. We've got big news coming over the next few weeks. It's going to be fantastic, blow your socks off kind of news. So get excited about that. As far as Masonic conventions go, just got an email about Esotericon, the Mid-Atlantic Esotericon, that's coming later in 2020. It's like 5 months away. I'm going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun, and really looking forward to it. We got an email. Everybody, I think, who went last year got an email this year. And so if you have a chance, check that out. Go to their website. We'll link back to that. There's actually a link to their website on MasonicConChicago.com. So it's really all there. And tickets went on sale, actually, for MasonicCon in Attleboro, Massachusetts. They are still doing the $5 gets you in the door all day long, all the vendors and stuff. In order to really do it right and to make it even better, they did have to start charging a little bit. So I think it's $25 if you want to see all the speakers and all the vendors all day. And if you want the festive board at the end of the day also, then I think the total cost of a ticket is $80 or $85. Really not bad considering last year, I think the festive board by itself was $50. But it was fantastic. Great food. We had kind of an open bar. I mean, it was a really great time, and the fellowship is second to none. That's really big. I also, and on a sad note, the architect of MasonicCon, Brian Simmons, he lost his father this last week, and it's been incredibly difficult for him and his family. You know, they're doing okay, as we all would, but if you would just keep Brian in your thoughts over the next month or so, I'm sure he would appreciate that. He and his family do so much for this craft, and it would just be awesome if you guys would keep him in your thoughts. So, Brian, we're thinking about you, buddy. This week on the program, we are going to be talking about the differences between clandestine and irregular, and some of the different what we call nomenclature that goes along with that. We're all taught in Masonry not to talk to clandestine Masons, not to do this, not to fraternize. And where's the line in the sand? You know, some people take it so seriously, like if you're in a state that doesn't recognize Prince Hall and Prince Hall is considered clandestine to you, what, you can't have friends outside of Lodge who are Prince Hall Masons? Like, where is, oh, my grandmaster will yell at me if I, you know, talk to a guy on my lunch break who is a PHA Mason. You know, where's the line in the sand, right? Well, spoiler alert, there should not be any grandmaster who tells you who you can and can't talk to on your lunch break. Your obligation holds you to not talking about Masonic things, but I think we all should have some common sense there. But in any case, we're going to talk a little bit about clandestine Masonry, irregular Masonry, what those two terms mean, because they are very different terms. Illustrious brother, a past grandmaster, Akram Elias, actually wrote a great piece for the DC Freemason magazine, which I'm going to read for you in this episode. And we'll also read some definitions of clandestine and irregular Masonry from some prominent Masonic dictionaries, a lexicon, and these kind of things. So all that coming up on this episode, and we'll get right into it right after this. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Roark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together, and I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program, and in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. And we're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. We just added a few names to the current producers, fellows, and contributors on our website. Brother Valdez, Venzer, Wallace, Wary, Wright, Rosenloff, Schweitzer, Hogan, Blaine, Gleason, Hassel, all of you guys are new contributors to the podcast, and I just want to say thank you guys very, very much. Now, let's get into this week's education. I'd like to start off by quoting from MasonicDictionary.com. First, I want to read you the definition for regular. Regular, a lodge working under the legal authority of a warrant of constitution, is said to be regular. The word was first used in 1723 in the first edition of Anderson's Constitutions. In the 8th General Regulation published in that work, it is said, quote, if any set or number of Freemasons shall take upon themselves to form a lodge without the Grand Master's warrant, the regular lodges are not to countenance them." End quote. Ragan says in his book on page 72 that the word was first heard of in French Freemasonry in 1773 when an edict of the Grand Orient thus defined it. Quote, "A regular lodge is a lodge attached to the Grand Orient, and a regular Freemason is a member of a regular lodge." Now that comes out of Mackey's encyclopedia listed here on MasonicDictionary.com. From there, let's move over to Clandestine, which has a few entries. First, in Anglo-Saxon, Helen meant something hidden or secret, a meaning preserved in conceal. Hell, the hidden place, is from the same word. Helen descended from the Latin celare, hide, and on this was built the Latin clandestinus, or secret, hidden, furtive. In English, clandestine thus derived came to mean a bad secret, one that must be indulged in furtively. A secret may be innocent. It is merely something done without the knowledge of others, and nothing is more common. But a clandestine act is one done in such a way as to elude observation. Clandestine masonry is a bad kind of irregular and unlawful secret society, falsely claiming to be Masonic. In the constitutions, a clandestine mason is defined as, quote, "one claiming to be a free and accepted mason, not having received the degrees in a lodge recognized as regular by the Grand Lodge of the State of New York," end quote. Now that source is from 100 Words in Masonry. Clandestine Freemason, in Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, reads "one made in or affiliated with a clandestine lodge. With clandestine lodges or Freemasons, regular Freemasons are forbidden to associate or converse on Masonic subjects." A clandestine lodge, a body of Freemasons or of those improperly claiming to be Freemasons, uniting in a lodge without the consent of a Grand Lodge, or, although originally legally constituted, continuing to work after its charter has been revoked, is styled a clandestine lodge. Neither Anderson nor Etnick employed the word. It was first used in the Book of Constitutions in a note by Northrop on page 239 of his edition, see the Constitutions of 1784, regular lodge would be a better term. I would encourage all of our listeners also to read the entire entry in Mackey's Encyclopedia on clandestine. But continuing, moving into a separate area, let me read you the short paragraph on clandestine in Mackey's Lexicon, which is a little bit different of a book. It says, on page 81 of the Lexicon of Freemasonry, clandestine, not legal, a body of Masons uniting in a lodge without the consent of a Grand Lodge, or although originally legally constituted, continuing to work after its charter has been revoked, is styled clandestine lodge, and its members are called clandestine Masons. With clandestine lodges or Masons, regular Masons are forbidden to associate or converse on Masonic subjects. So here again is a very similar in wording, like almost 90% of the wording is exactly the same. Not surprising since they're both from the same source. He probably just did the, 19th century version of cut and paste. So we've talked about regular, we've talked about clandestine. What's irregular mean? Let's find out. So in terms of irregular, there's really not anything you can find of sustenance, I suppose you could say, in anything of Mackey's. It is interesting. Perhaps it is a newer distinction within Freemasonry. And so with that, we would move into an article written by Akram R. Elias, past Grand Master and Chairman of the Grand Lodge Committee on Masonic Education for the Grand Lodge of Washington, D.C. And I'll put a link to this entire issue in the show as part of the downloadable content in the app. But here we go. Confusion in the Temple by Akram R. Elias. In Freemasonry, when we use terms like jurisdiction, territory, regular, irregular, recognized, and clandestine, each has a very specific meaning and point to a distinct concept. The intent of this article is to provide some clarity to help us avoid confusion when making use of these terms. Jurisdiction versus territory. In Masonry, jurisdiction and territory are different concepts. A Masonic jurisdiction is defined as the body of all lodges under the authority of one Grand Lodge, while a territory refers to a geographic area, like a state or country. A Grand Lodge may have jurisdiction over several territories. For example, the Grand Lodge of the District of Columbia's Masonic jurisdiction includes the territories of the District of Columbia and the country of Lebanon. In a like way, two Grand Lodges, like Masonic jurisdictions, may share the same territory, and when they do, each Grand Lodge asserts sovereignty only over its own lodge's jurisdiction within that shared territory. For example, our Grand Lodge and Prince Hall are two Masonic jurisdictions that share the same territory of the District of Columbia. What about exclusive jurisdiction? A Grand Lodge is said to enjoy exclusive jurisdiction over a territory if and only if no other Grand Lodge has jurisdiction over that territory. In the case of the country of Lebanon, for example, where four Grand Lodges, the Grand Lodges of Scotland, New York, the District of Columbia, and National Francais have jurisdiction, none of the four may claim an exclusive jurisdiction over that country territory. What about invasion of territory? When a Grand Lodge has exclusive jurisdiction over a territory, no other Grand Lodge is supposed to open lodges within that territory. Doing so would be considered an invasion of territory. Regular. The concept of regularity has changed over the centuries, and its evolution is not the focus of this article. Instead, I will address the modern meaning of regularity in the 21st century. Although each Grand Lodge is sovereign, when it comes to the concept of regularity, it is generally agreed that to be regular in its practice of Freemasonry, it must satisfy a set of key criteria that include all of the following. A. Proof of legitimacy of origin. It must show proof of lineage and legitimacy of origin. Otherwise, it is called clandestine. Our Grand Lodge, in the past, considered the Prince Hall Grand Lodge to be clandestine, acting, no doubt, with the best knowledge that they had at the time. Yet Prince Hall cannot be clandestine because it traces its lineage and legitimacy to the United Grand Lodge of England. Furthermore, a non-recognized, more on the concept of recognized later, Grand Lodge does not necessarily mean that the said Grand Lodge is clandestine. This is a commonly made mistake, especially in the United States. For example, in the country or territory of Italy, there exist two regular Grand Lodges, the Grand Orient of Italy and the regular Grand Lodge of Italy. Our Grand Lodge does not recognize the regular Grand Lodge of Italy, RGLI. This non-recognition on our part, however, does in no way make the RGLI clandestine, because the regular Grand Lodge of Italy traces its lineage and legitimacy of origin to United Grand Lodge of England. B. Sovereignty. It must exercise full sovereignty over its lodges within its own jurisdiction. And further, no Grand Lodge can impose its constitutions, bylaws, or code of justice on any other Grand Lodge. C. Single gender membership and tiled meetings. A Grand Lodge must have its membership restricted to either men or women. A Grand Lodge that has its membership composed of both men and women, referred to as co-masonry, cannot be regular. Furthermore, men and women Masons cannot sit together in tiled meetings. However, they may sit and participate together in open, non-tiled lodge meetings and activities. D. Belief in a supreme being. It must require of each of its members hold a belief in a supreme being. Atheists cannot be made Masons in a regular Grand Lodge. E. Three great lights. It must display on the altar of each of its lodges the volume or volumes of the sacred law and the square and compasses. A candidate's obligation must be taken on a volume of sacred law. F. Religion and politics. No religious activities or political debates are allowed in tiled lodge meetings. Irregular. A grand lodge that violates any or all of the above-mentioned criteria of regularity would be considered irregular. Once again, many in the United States confuse the terms irregular and clandestine, but they are not equivalent. A clandestine lodge is automatically considered irregular because it cannot prove its lineage and legitimacy of origin. An irregular Grand Lodge, however, is not necessarily clandestine. For example, the Grand Orient of France, one of the oldest Grand Lodges in the world, was no longer considered regular when it chose to ignore several of the criteria of regularity. For instance, the requirement of a belief in a supreme being. This, by no means, however, makes this Grand Lodge clandestine. Recognition. Recognition is a concept totally different from regularity and is not a requirement for regularity. Recognition by one Grand Lodge for another simply means that members of both Grand Lodges are allowed to sit together in tiled meetings of lodges under either jurisdiction. This is what is commonly known as intervisitations. Recognition may or may not be extended by any Grand Lodge to another. This is a matter of choice, not a requirement. For example, a Grand Lodge in a state of the United States does not have to recognize a Prince Hall Grand Lodge in that same state, or vice versa. And this non-recognition does not make either Grand Lodge irregular or clandestine. Can a Mason of our Grand Lodge sit in a tiled lodge with a Mason from a jurisdiction that is not recognized by our Grand Lodge? The answer is no, if the lodge is under either of the two jurisdictions. For example, since our Grand Lodge does not recognize the regular Grand Lodge of Italy, RGLI, a Washington, D.C. Mason cannot sit in a tiled meeting of an RGLI lodge, nor can an RGLI Mason sit in a tiled meeting of a lodge under our jurisdiction. The answer is yes if the tiled meeting is taking place in a third jurisdiction that is recognized by both Grand Lodges. Using again the case of the RGLI, a District of Columbia Mason can sit with an RGLI Mason in a tiled meeting of a lodge under the UGLE, Scotland, or Israel, because all three Grand Lodges recognize the regular Grand Lodge of Italy and our Grand Lodge. While recognition is a matter of choice, its application may impact negatively the status of a regular Grand Lodge. For example, if a regular Grand Lodge recognizes an irregular or a clandestine Grand Lodge, it may lose recognition from other regular Grand Lodges because of intervisitations. What about women Freemasons? The United Grand Lodge of England acknowledges the existence in the United Kingdom of two women's-only Grand Lodges, the Honorable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons, HFAF, and the Order of Women Freemasons. The UGLE does not believe either to be clandestine and considers them both to be regular in their practice of Freemasonry. The UGLE, however, cannot recognize either one of them. This is because recognition allows intervisitations, and since regularity requires the presence of single-gender Masons in a tiled meeting, there can be no recognition between a men's regular Grand Lodge and a women's regular Grand Lodge if both wish to remain regular in their practice of Freemasonry. Therefore, if the UGLE were to recognize that HFAF, for example, both the UGLE and HFAF would become irregular. On the other hand, however, the UGLE, HFAF, and OWF meet socially, and the Grand Masters of both women's organizations were invited to the live screening of the tercentenary, the 300 celebrations from the Royal Albert Hall at Freemasons Hall, and they were UGLE's guests at the subsequent dinner. Furthermore, since September of 2000, the UGLE has allowed the leasing of its Masonic buildings to lodges affiliated with the Order of Women's Freemasons and the Honorable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons. Most recently, permission has been granted for UGLE lodges to rent rooms at the HFAF headquarters. As we use terms like jurisdiction, territory, regular, irregular, recognized, and clandestine, my brethren, let us do so with caution, empathy, and discernment. Let there be light. So that is the article from past Grand Master Akram Elias. And it should be noted that Akram has a distinct knowledge of this because his wife is actually a worshipful master of America Lodge, which is in Washington, D.C. What I thought was really interesting within that article is there were situations that I've been in myself where I was a secretary of my lodge, and I had a brother who was overseas, and he contacted me and he said, "Robert, can I visit this military lodge on base?" And I was like, "Well, where's the charter from?" And so he told me the name of the lodge, and I looked it up, and it was Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Oklahoma. At the time, Oklahoma did not recognize the Prince Hall in the state. So I told the brother that they are not currently recognized by the Grand Lodge of Oklahoma. But, you know, Illinois recognizes Prince Hall of Illinois, so the Grand Lodge of Prince Hall of Illinois recognized the Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Oklahoma, it would be okay. But the devil's in the details. And, of course, really, it wasn't okay. And what we found out before he visited was that Illinois Grand Lodge recognizes all Prince Hall Grand Lodges that are recognized by the Grand Lodge in the state. So, because Oklahoma Grand Lodge didn't recognize them, neither did Illinois. So I had to tell him, "Nope, you can't go." Well, about a week before, I found out that it was an error in the printing in the pentagraph book from the Grand Lodge of Oklahoma. They said, no, we have it. We do recognize the Prince Hall Grand Lodge, yada, yada, yada. So I got to tell my brother, I said, "Hey, you can go visit now." So he was very happy about that. But it also happens quite often where I use the Prince Hall example because it's probably the largest in the United States where we have brothers of what we call quote-unquote regular Grand Lodges who will say, you know, somebody is a member of a Prince Hall Grand Lodge and they consider it clandestine. And that's just erroneous 99% of the time. Our Prince Hall brothers are not irregular in many cases. And, you know, I think that's going to be it for this week. We had a pretty good application in talking about clandestine and irregular Freemasonry. I think we've got a better understanding of it now. We actually read a short talk bulletin about clandestine masonry back in 2013. I think it was out on the 15th of September is what I have here. And we read a paper that starts off, volume number 13, December 1935, number 12, Clandestine by Unknown. Every master mason knows that he must not visit a clandestine lodge, not talk Masonically with a clandestinely made mason. But not all master masons can define clandestinism. And it goes on to define a lot of that. But written back in 1935, so an issue that still existed back then, and quite frankly was probably a lot more rabid considering the wide swath of America that did not recognize Prince Hall Freemasonry. And of course, only 40 years before thereabouts, you know, we lost recognition we declared irregular the Grand Orient of France. So, just some really interesting items there. Before I leave you this week, I did forget to mention at the top of the show, we did a facelift to the Whence Came You website, wcypodcast.com. Has a little bit different of a look. Everything is still there, and hopefully it's more easy to navigate, bigger pictures, poppier things that you can see. Links to our social networking sites all there in the center. You can listen to the show right on the top of the website. And just blocks that refer you back to past episodes. You can contact me right from the front page. We've got to support the show, our shop. But presentation schedule is up, and you can actually see just a little bit of a blurb on all of the talks that I do. Of course, a couple historical/mythical, a few on symbolism and occult, some instructional as well, and it's just got a little button next to each one. You can click the book button, and you can pick a date, and it'll send me an email, and then we'll just get to talking about when you want me to come out and do a talk. But my next talk is actually going to be the Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America and its Colonial Tavern Beginnings, which is an examination of Freemasonry as it existed in the days that led up to America's Decree of Independence. So we're going to show some exclusive rare documents that are going to blow your mind. It's open to the public. Where am I doing it? Evans Lodge 524 in Evanston, Illinois. My good friend, my brother, Rob Wingeter, is the worship master, and we're going to be doing the presentation in the parlor room in this epic, epic Masonic temple. It's a big building. It's a little cold sometimes, so if you're going to come out, make sure you got your thick socks on. I'll be on my feet doing the lecture, so I'll be fine. But I look forward to seeing everybody there December 10th. That's right. And then after that, in February of 2020, we're filling up in 2020 pretty good. I'll be doing a brand new presentation that I was asked. I said, just give me anything you want me to talk on or do some research. So I'll do a talk called The Ark and Freemasonry. We're going to explore legends of the Ark of the Covenant, historical facts, relationship to Freemasonry, and of course, its occult significance. But that's going to be part of kind of like an afternoon symposium. March 7th, I'll be at the Southeastern Masonic Education Symposium, which is down in Florida, in Tampa. They do have tickets for sale for that one. Esoterics 101, I'll be doing April 2nd, 2020 at Unity Lodge up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And, of course, we've got MasonicCon is at Ezekiel Bates coming up. I believe, I'm not sure what my topic's going to be there yet. I think we're doing a double. I'm going to be coming together with another person to do a joint conference. And I know I'll be at Collinwood Lodge 582 in Euclid, Ohio, on my birthday next year. So that'll be fun, too. And then, of course, I'm going to be at Esotericon, and whether I'm doing a presentation or not, I will be at Camp Masonry this year. Fantastic event. I love it. I wouldn't miss it. And the same goes for Esotericon and any of these other things. I enjoy these conferences so much, and I hope you do too. The only person who goes to more cons than I do is Bill Short. And a shout out to Bill Short, because Bill Short got elected Worshipful Master. You know, every once in a while, you hear about somebody being elected Worshipful Master that you know, and you just think, oh, that's great. But man, this is so amazing. I don't know of anybody else who might be as prepared to be in the East than Bill Short. This guy goes to more Masonic events than anybody I know, and he can drive anywhere in the United States. He will drive to go to a Masonic event. He can be anywhere in a matter of hours, and he'll tell you that. But congratulations, Bill. This is all you. I say I go to a lot of events. Bill goes to everything. So, amazing. Congrats, Bill. And with all that, I think that's it this week. I hope you enjoyed. I know I enjoyed reading about this stuff. I learned something. I hope you did, too. I learned that irregular is not a term that's really explored in Mackey's very much. But I also learned, of course, a lot from our brother Akram. I always do every time I hang out with him. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. And the work he's doing is just fantastic. You know, and I guess before we leave, I should also mention I heard a few people say to me that they missed the last episode. You guys got to go back and listen to the last episode. 419 was on the origin and development of the seven liberal arts and sciences. We actually had Janie Paul Lamb, the author of Myth, Magic, Masonry, come on the program and read a paper for us, an original piece that he did, and it's fantastic. So I hope you guys go back and check that episode out if you missed it. Thank you for subscribing on YouTube. Thanks for giving us a like on Facebook, on Twitter, all that good stuff. We're on Instagram. You can follow me there, and that's where you'll find some wild Masonic stuff that I might put up as far as photography goes. I used to be a photographer, so I try to get artistic sometimes, so I apologize if you're like, stop with the artistic stuff, just show us some cool pictures. But anyway, I digress. Stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.